Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, we have rumors, well, actual leaks of the new upcoming Pixel Buds A earbuds. Google accidentally talked about this unreleased product on Twitter because that's something Google likes to do. We also have a few leaks of upcoming Samsung products that we'll talk about, including the new Z Fold 3 and Z Flip 3. And this was a very Google-heavy news week. Lots to talk about. There's also the Epic versus Apple trial that's continuing. It's in its second week. A lot of little tidbits that, if not specifically Google or Android-related, will certainly be relevant to the wider App Store industry, and we'll get to why. And then if we have some time at the end, we'll talk about some social network news. WhatsApp is backing down on its privacy policy, sort of. And Twitter just did a whole bunch of stuff. It expanded spaces. It's testing a tip jar. It's a lot. We'll get to that at the end. And then what's making us happy. So to join me this week, R. Wagner, how are you
doing? Hello. I'm good. I'm missing rain. Like, Texas has gotten so much rain in the last couple of weeks, and Orlando has just gotten, like, barely anything down where I am. It's very sad.
It's been raining here for 3 weeks every day, so...
Give it to me.
I really don't sympathize with you. I'm sure by the end of the summer, I'll want some rain again, but for now, I just want the temperatures to go above, like, 50 degrees. And speaking of 50 degrees, I don't know... 98 degrees of my heart, Jerry Hildenbrand. How are you, dude?
I love that. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you. So this has been a very busy, like not a ton of device news this week, but just in terms of overall density of news, just a ton to get through. So let's get started with some devices. This was a doozy. We know that Google will announce a cheaper version of the Pixel Buds A, or the Pixel Buds rather, called the Pixel Buds A. And then I think it was it Wednesday or Tuesday? This week has been a blur. Google, the Android account, the official verified Android account, tweets I'll read it for you here. It seems like one of those throwaway tweets that you don't actually notice until they announce an unreleased product in it. Quality sound and quick Bluetooth pairing. Check, the new Pixel Buds A series have arrived. Enjoy one-tap Bluetooth pairing with the updated fast pair experience on hashtag Android. And then there's a photo of new Pixel Buds with fast pair and a photo of the all-white Pixel Buds A connecting to what looks like a Pixel 5. So this tweet goes up, it was around midday, I think, and it stays up for about 20 minutes. And then a bunch of people like us noticed that it was up and start tweeting about it. I quote tweeted it saying that this was the most Google thing to ever happen. And then about 5 minutes later, the tweet goes dead. Thankfully, everybody knew that it would go dead. So they took screenshots. And that's why we have this evidence for posterity. Now, not a big surprise, Ara. We know that this is coming. We now probably know that it's coming at Google I.O. But this is interesting because we weren't really sure how Google was going to market this. It's obviously less color. The ones that we've seen, it's a single tone color scheme for all of them. So there's an all white, probably an all black, and I believe it was like an all green, dark green hue.
Well, not quite, because remember the sort of sage ones that the Google store leaked. Like, let's keep in mind, this is not the first time Google itself has, this is not the first time the Google itself has leaked these buds already, because they did it on the Google store about a month ago. But those were sort of sage, but they still had, if memory serves, they still had the white exterior, right?
Yeah, the case is white. I think the case will be white for all of them, but the inside, it's a single tone, whereas on the current Pixel Buds, it's black and white for all of them. So I don't know. I mean, it's a black interior, and then the touchpad is colored. It's either white, black, or mint, or orange.
Orange, mint, or black, or white. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's cool.
They look identical to the current Pixel Buds, and hopefully they will perform better. But now we know that they're actually happening. We don't know much else. We just know that. They're coming. That's it.
Yeah. No, I'm just hoping that whatever the heck they did with these, that they made pairing consistent, pairing and connection more, connectivity more consistent. Because I know Andrew Bartnick was bitching about his Pixel Buds earlier this week, and I know he's not the only one. So people are still having issues with the $180 pair that they're offering up right now. So if these have, even if they lose some of the touch controls, even if they lose some of the features, if they're more consistent, they will hands down be an upgrade over the current model.
So I'm looking at this photo a little bit more closely now. I'm zooming in. It looks like it's gray inside. So it's not all white. The touchpad area will be white to match the case. And then there's sort of like a gray accent on the inside of the case to match the tips that go inside the ear.
Well, yeah, I mean, white on white on white is just one of those things of you're just begging for things to look off color and look like they're not quite the same shade. So having the wingtips and the insiding of the case be the same gray accent color, I think will make it easier for things to look cohesive and nice. Mm-hmm. Although that said, I still wonder why the heck are all of these white on the outside, because white is a color that shows literally every blemish and scratch ever.
Yeah, my Pixel Buds cases, the case looks worse for the wear. So,
yeah. See, I whenever I got mine in, I instantly was like, okay, where can I get a case for these? Case for the case, really?
Case for the case. Yeah, Nomad actually makes a beautiful leather case for the Pixel Buds that I would recommend. But I think they're pretty pricey. They're like $50.
Oh yeah, no, screw that. I did the Spigen ones, and they felt nice. And are less than $20. So, hey.
All right. So, a couple other things. Samsung also accidentally kind of confirmed an upcoming phone, the Galaxy A82 5G. So, this will be a step up from the A72. And in the US, at least, we have the A52 5G, the A42 5G, and the A32 5G. This phone was confirmed in the security update article that Samsung maintains. They announced this, but they haven't actually said what it is yet. It's going to be a North American, or at least a Western optimized version of a phone that's out in Korea right now called the, what's it called? The Quantum 2, Galaxy Quantum. So,
God, I would buy that in a heartbeat.
So it's not like a brand new device. It's powered by the Snapdragon 855 Plus, and it's basically got specs from a couple of years ago, but it should do well in the mid-range. We'll see if it comes to North America. It looks like a nice product at the very least, and we'll have to wait a little bit longer to see if Samsung announces that. Another leak, the Galaxy Tab S7 Lite. So if you think about Android tablets, it's basically Samsung and Amazon with a little bit of Lenovo thrown in there. And then Huawei still makes a media tab, but it doesn't have GMS anymore. So Samsung's really it when it comes to Android tablets. The Lite series of its tablets have always been incredibly popular. The S5e, the S6 Lite, now the S7 Lite. This looks, I don't know, it looks great. It'll be thin bezel, very skinny. It'll come with a bunch of accessories. It'll come with an S Pen. It'll be 5G supported, according to Evan Blass. And it'll probably be around $400 or $500, powered by Snapdragon 750G, up to 8 gigs of RAM. You know, all the things. It's an Android tablet. It's not going to blow your socks off, but it looks like a decent device for what you get. Any thoughts on this? Jerry, we know that Google announced something called the entertainment space for Android tablets this week, which will debut on Walmart's On tablets later this year before being updated for other tablets, including, I'm assuming, ones from Lenovo. We don't know if Samsung will jump on board this, but it's basically like a Google TV magazine style layout that will live in the Discover feed area of your home screen.
Which is a better use for that area on a tablet, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know why people were upset about it when we told them, but I guess people like the Discover feed. Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the S7 Lite, I mean, Samsung releases a light version of its tablets, and those are almost as good, and they're a whole lot cheaper. And, you know, if you're interested in buying a new Android tablet, this is the one to buy.
You don't need an 8 series SoC in a tablet, unless you're using DeX for whatever reason.
Yeah, but I still think this is going to perform well enough for 90% of the people. And the price is going to be great for 100% of the people. That's the thing. If it does, you know, almost all of your needs, is it worth spending that big money for the one that does everything? That's something each person has to decide. To me, light versions, or, you know, like the Tab A, those were the only interesting Android tablets. And this is one that, you know, I knew Samsung had something to show off, and this is the one I've been waiting for. It's, you know, probably going to be the Android tablet that most people should buy.
Okay. Yeah. That's basically all we know about this. It's an Android tablet. It's not going to compete with the iPad Pro. That's for damn sure. But it's not supposed to.
But it's going to compete with the $50 tablets you can buy at the gas store.
It'll compete with, what's interesting is that Amazon released an upgraded version of its Tab, or its Fire HD 10 tablet, one of which is a productivity-focused product, which includes a Bluetooth keyboard and access to Microsoft 365. We talked about this a bit last week. That's coming mid-May. It's going to be significantly cheaper, like $300, but it also won't be as powerful, and it won't have access to the full Play Store. But again, that'll be fine for most people.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon tablets aren't bad at all for, you know, especially for like content consumption.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the tablet, or to the foldable leaks, because this, I think, is the most interesting. So we have two separate leaks, one detailing the Galaxy Z Flip 3 and another detailing the Galaxy Z Fold 3. The Flip 3 looks, I like it. It looks really cool. There's a bunch of colors sort of in the vein of the Galaxy A series. And Ara, the back of the phone where the camera modules have a black kind of like plate over it.
It looks like an early edition Pixel.
Yeah, it looks like a Panda Pixel.
Everybody has been in love with it.
I'm a big fan, and I think it looks exactly what I want out of a Z Flip, to be honest. Yeah, I really dig it. I like the green color a lot. We don't really know anything else about it at this point, but the fact that Samsung is embracing color in its foldable line makes me happy.
I'm really digging the green. I mean, the purple looks nice. The purple there looks better than the purple on the Galaxy S21, if I'm going to be just blatantly honest. But that greenish, tealish color, I'm not sure if it's just the marketing video that this was obviously screenshotted out of, but that color looks absolutely gorgeous to me, and I want more phones in that kind of color. Like, teal doesn't get the love that it deserves.
I'm 100% on board with that, for sure.
You know, show me the price.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. I want to see Samsung hit that 1,000 mark.
I think this will hit that $1,000 mark.
I'm hoping.
I think the cheapest Z Flip 3 model will be $999. That is my prediction.
And that's when it'll sell.
The Z Fold 3, this was shot what looks like from the same marketing video. Three colors, triple camera setup. It will support the S Pen, which is interesting. It'll have a 120 hertz refresh rate inside and out, which is an upgrade over the 60 hertz external panel and 120 hertz internal panel on the Z Fold 2. Don't really know anything else about it. We're assuming the cameras will be updated to Galaxy S21 caliber. We also assume that it will have better glass, ultra thin glass, than the previous version, even though that's been pretty reliable from what we can tell. Friend of the pod, Michael Fisher, told us that he's had some problems. He had to send in his Z Fold 2 to get replaced because it had a crack in it. So you know, third generation, right? This is where Samsung gets the opportunity to mainstream its foldables for all intents and purposes.
You know, at least make it better than the first and the second generation. Stuff like this takes time. I get it.
I mean, if it's supporting the S Pen, it's got to be pretty robust, right?
Yeah.
It'll have to. You don't want to have a situation where you see the imprint of the S Pen every time you write.
Yeah, that's...
So the soft plastic layer has to go. It has to be... They will have to cover it with glass, and that will be that.
I think you're right. I think it'll have to be glass for the S Pen to work. I don't know if the digitizer can transmit electricity through the plastic.
Yeah, we'll see. We shall see. What's also on deck is an improved flex mode for both of these phones, which is cool because right now the flex mode enabled apps are mostly Samsung apps and YouTube, just a couple of Google ones. But if they can get developers on board, flex mode, if you don't know, is the ability to fold the tablet or the foldable into sort of an L shape so that the bottom half is sitting like kind of like a laptop and you get, say, an external or a widescreen keyboard on the bottom, and you can, you know, be in a document or something.
When they showed that flex mode off, that almost sold me. I'm not going to lie. That is something really interesting and different, especially, you know, nobody wants to use a phone as their main productivity device, but when you have to, that looks like a great way to do it. I hope that gets expanded in a way that apps just start churning out to support it.
Yeah, they need to make it easy on devs to upgrade their apps to support it. But if there's a tablet mode version of an app, it shouldn't be difficult to make it flex mode enabled. So we'll see. So that's all the device stuff that we have this week. Let's move on to talk about some Google news. So Google will allow some of its workers to stay home permanently. This is a big shift for a company that has hundreds of thousands of employees. Google said that it will allow up about 60% of Google staff to work in the office a few days of a week, while another 20% will be able to relocate and work from one of the many company sites. And then the rest, so 20% of the overall workforce, will be able to apply and work from home permanently. So 80% of its employees will be expected to go back to work at an office in some capacity. But there will also be, quote, reset days to help employees, quote, recharge during the pandemic in 2021. And those are already happening, but they will offer more of them throughout this year. It's a big shift. It's a company that has, I think, 150,000 employees, and many of them are office workers. Many of them have proven that they can work from home indefinitely. And the fact that Google is one of the first movers here will make a big difference to the rest of the industry, and hopefully it trickles down. Because as permanent remote workers ourselves, we absolutely know that we can do that kind of work. So
I'm you know, the 20% could be the people that do nothing but sit and write code. I'll bet those people are more productive from home. And as far as a work environment, yeah, you don't have anybody right beside you. But when you turn on your computer, it can be exactly the same if it was connected to Wi-Fi at your office. So there's, you know, that's smart to have some of those people just stay at home. It saves on, you know, office space, electric bills. It saves Google some money, and it may be more productive. I'm curious. I wish they would tell us.
Well, Google says that as a company, it saved $1 billion over the last year by allowing employees to work from home. I mean, that's an enormous cost savings. Obviously, if you can optimize cohorts to work efficiently at home, it will save the company money in the long run. The concern there is, and this is something that has been debunked through research, is can teams maintain a culture when some people work from an office full-time, some only come in a few days a week, and some work remotely? But that's really a manager problem. It's more of a, on a micro level rather than a macro level, right? If you have a team that can support people working in all different environments and make them feel like they are a part of the team, I don't think there will be an endemic problem with this way of working.
No, the answer to that question is yes. Google, just message Daniel and he'll help you.
I mean,
I
think of myself as somebody who advocates for work, you know, permanent work from home as a way to foster, I think, an inclusive culture. We have one here at AC and throughout the future team. And I mean, this is inside baseball, but our former company, Mobile Nations, was acquired by Future back in 2019. We were then sort of integrated into the company over the year. And then as the pandemic hit, Future had already looked to Mobile Nations as a benchmark for allowing employees to work remotely. And they had intended to slowly allow more and more people to work from home 1, 2, 3 days a week. When the pandemic hit, they had to change things very quickly. And they used our model as a success story. Our own Russell Hawley, who we said goodbye to last week, was basically the person who helped onboard thousands of new Future employees into a remote work environment. And he did so incredibly well. And it came directly from Mobile Nations having never worked at an office. We always had a remote culture. So you're never going to hear us talking negatively about that. I mean, there are absolutely advantages, in my opinion, to having an office, and especially from a collaboration perspective. But if you're able to bring people together once or twice a year, which we were able to do, then yeah, I think it works.
And also, I'm just going to say, I love having remote work because it means that I can live wherever I want. Like, I take my laptop and before the pandemic, I would just take my laptop and I would go right from Epcot for an afternoon. And whenever it's like, oh, I need to go take article pictures, I'm just going to go to the park because it looks better than in my apartment. I love that.
I mean, that's a bonus, certainly, for some people.
But I mean, think about how ridiculously expensive it is to live in like Southern California or Seattle, because this is where these big companies are headquartered and they wanted everybody in the office. We have proven you don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the extrication from New York City and San Francisco has already happened to some extent. I know people who have moved to cheaper parts of both of those states or even out of state to save money. I have friends, I live in Toronto. I have friends who moved from a, you know, one bedroom apartment here in Toronto to a city called Hamilton, which is just west of Toronto. And they were able to rent a full house, a 3-bedroom house, for the same price as they were renting that one bedroom in Toronto. So it's happening everywhere, I think, and Google is wise to acknowledge that and let it ride out for the next few years. All right, let's talk about some Google Play data changes. So obviously, as I'm sure you've heard, iOS 14.5 not only forces developers to disclose what kind of data they are asking users to share with them, privacy and otherwise, but they force developers to Apple forces developers to ask users whether they want to be tracked the first time they open an app that does use tracking cookies or any other metrics to track data. And users can opt out. And according to an early report that was published in iMore this week, 96% of users are opting out, which is a lot. And Facebook and other companies are not happy about that.
Yeah, it tells me that 96% of users don't understand what they're agreeing or disagreeing to. The way Apple does this is just dumb.
So now we hear that Google will start allowing or forcing developers to disclose what data they are asking users to share, but not when they start the app. It's not about tracking. They won't necessarily force developers to stop tracking. They're going to ask developers to publish this within the Play Store. Today, it was a pre-announcement. This week was a pre-announcement. They will publish the actual policy around August, September. And then in Q4, so probably around December. Developers can declare that information in the Google Play console. Then next year, so Q1 2022, users will start seeing that data show up within Google Play. So there is a huge runway here, Ara. And I think Google is smart to do this because companies will be punished if they misrepresent what they're tracking. So giving developers, the thousands, hundreds of thousands of them that publish to the Play Store, a lead time of this length is probably safe.
Yeah. And remember, it's not just about like cookie tracking. It's also a matter of like what data an app like collects about you during the course of your using it. So like not even just like, oh, you went to all these different websites while you had this app installed on your phone. It's also a, okay, you use the app to do this, you use your app to do that. This is the data that we've acquired through, this is the data that we've collected over your usage habits and how you use our app. So it's because Apple is only focused on like tracking you across your device and across your habits. So this is hopefully going to be a little bit more in depth than that, but I wish it was going to be quicker. Because whenever I looked at that timeline, I'm like, it's going to take 9 months for this stuff to start showing up in the Play Store. Really?
I just want it to be done right. Every iPhone user that just installed the Nest app and said no to tracking, my thermostat can come on when it knows I'm coming home. Yours can't. I would like to see that as an explanation. This is what Nest wants to do. This is why they want to do it. And when you give the user real usable information, then they can make a better informed decision. If something says, do you want to be tracked? Well, hell no. Everybody's going to check no, but that's not helpful. That's going to break some functionality. You're not going to get the full experience. Some apps are just bad. An app that has ads that just track your location just because, yeah, that's bad. Get rid of that. I want either Google or Apple to try to do it right. And it's very expensive and it'd be very complicated to do. And it would still depend on developers being honest and forthright. And, you know, the developers that are scamming you aren't going to be aren't going to be forthright in the first place. I don't know. They're doing this because they know if they don't, somebody's going to force them to, for starters. This is going to be the big part of the news once they're done with antitrust is privacy. So they want to get ahead of that, and that's good for us. So in the end, we win, even if it's a small victory.
Yeah, I mean, this is the data that Google is asking developers to share on the Play Store. Mm-hmm. Approximate or precise location, contacts, personal information such as name, email address, photos and videos, audio file, and storage files. So it's basically, it's giving you the data about the permissions that they're going to ask you, right? You still have to opt into those permissions. Google's not changing that permission model. They'll also be able to disclose whether the app includes data encryption, which is becoming a more important part of a lot of consumer products, right? If you have an enterprise product and you use that a lot, it obviously already includes data encryption. Consumer products are becoming more likely to enable it by default. And these apps, consumers will be able to vote with their dollars, right? If an app does include some of these protections, they may be more likely to use them. Google will also ask developers to disclose whether or not the app can function without sharing or using certain data. So
that's helpful.
For example, if you opt not to share your location with an app that may not be an Uber or a Google Maps, but may have, some sort of map functionality that's not core to its use case, will the app just break if you disable location functions? The app will be able to disclose that. It'll also ask developers to say whether the users can request data deletion in the event of an app being uninstalled. So that's a big deal because a lot of the time you try an app, you sign up for it, and then you stop using it, and then you don't really think about the status of your account anymore. And a lot of the time, these zombie accounts are used to accrue data points for these developers. And then that data is then sold, anonymized perhaps, but it's still sold off. You may be able to delete, to ask a developer to delete your data if you know that they're allowed to do, if you can do it. So that's a big deal. And then finally, does the app follow Google's family policy, which is self-explanatory? Is it an app that's aimed at children? This, so there are a lot of moving parts, which makes sense why they're going to take until next year to actually roll it out. But agree with you, Ara, like if Google wanted to get this done within the next 3 months, they probably could. It would just not be a complete data set. A lot of developers just right. would not care enough to get it done by then.
I think you're still going to see a lot of developers not care. That app you use that hasn't been updated in a year, that developer's not going to take the time to do all this work. I wonder what Google's going to do about those apps.
They're not going to, because I mean, there's tons of apps that just like haven't been updated in like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, they just won't be allowed to be updated. They'll have to, so for example, Android Central has an app, and Google started requiring apps that categorize themselves as news apps or news aggregators to disclose that information because of, you know, for libel protections and things like that. We were not allowed to update our app until that disclosure was made public through the Play console. So it will likely be the same thing. At some point, Google will just prevent apps from being updated. It's not going to remove the app from the Play Store, but if you want to maintain it and start targeting new customers, then
I think they should remove the listing. Google, I would remove the listing of every app that doesn't comply.
That may be eventually what happens. We won't actually know the policy until later this year. So hopefully that will happen, but I doubt it. All right, let's move on. Google or YouTube specifically rolled out Shorts to all U.S. creators. And at the same time, it pissed a lot of those people off by making those Shorts, by allowing other creators to essentially use those Shorts and sample that content. Now, Google says that it will roll out a fix for this, which will allow creators to opt out of their Shorts being used for other remixed purposes, for example, sort of like TikTok, but it hasn't happened yet. And that pissed off a lot of people. Actually, that's not true. I've seen 2 high quality, well-made Shorts. None of them have been in my feed. They've not been on the home screen. They are from creators that I follow that have produced really good Shorts. This is not a TikTok competitor yet. This is not even an Instagram Reels competitor yet. This is just a bare bones product that I don't think will get the uptake that Google hopes it does. But I don't know. Ara, what about you?
I mean, it'll be interesting. I know that people are interested in like that bite size. Like there's a reason TikTok took off during the pandemic. It was the right size for people's attention spans. But being able to be like, okay, here are our Shorts. If you really like these, why don't you try out some of our long form content? So it could be a way to help bolster YouTube and help draw people to more creators. But it's also just a matter of you got to go where the people are. And right now, YouTube Shorts still has to try and pull people towards Shorts as opposed to them being like, oh, if I want to watch a video, do I want to watch YouTube? Do I want to watch something that's longer? Or do I want to just go to TikTok and see these like 10-second, 30-second, 60-second videos and be done with it?
What's really interesting about this, so part of the reason creators were upset is that the policy extends to full-length videos. So say I'm a creator, I'm just starting out. I want to sample a Mr. Mobile video within YouTube Shorts. Right now, the policy is that on a per video basis, Mr. Mobile has to opt out that video to allow me to take a portion of it and use it in a short. And Google's saying this will spur engagement both for the creator that where the piece was taken, but also for the creators that are remixing Shorts and making them new, right? This is the whole remix culture that TikTok has popularized. But if I was a creator, especially somebody like as big as Mr. Mobile, who sees little snippets of his videos used in an unauthorized way all over YouTube Shorts, I would be pissed.
Google they talked a lot about, you know, why and whatever, but what's going to happen is a creator is going to be given an option. Do you want to, you know, enable this thing, or would you rather do it on a case by case basis? And if the user says they want to do it case by case, all the videos are opted out and they can go through and choose them. Google just did things out of order and released it. They goofed up. The opt out choice should have been, you know, there before they just opted everything in.
Yeah. Anyway, this will be fixed eventually. It just shows that Google, I think, tried to slip this under the radar. I don't know if it was necessarily nefarious, but in order to get to spur engagement on a new medium, they needed to allow people to easily create shorts. And what's easier than literally taking somebody else's content and using it in your own? And it's just shitty that they didn't ask permission about it. So that will change, but that's another little thing that happened with Google this week. A couple more. Google's fired AI manager is heading to Apple. So
Dr. Gebru.
Not Timnit Gebru, but not Timnit Gebru herself.
Yeah.
But Sammy Bengio, who was an outspoken, sorry, you're right. This person was not let go. But Sammy Bengio, who was a public supporter of two of the AI researchers who were let go by Google's AI ethics team, is now going over to Apple. Look, this is what it is, right? Google is just alienating its AI ethics team. We reported earlier this year that journals no longer want to accept work that comes out of Google's AI ethics lab. This is going to be a stain on that division for a very long time. However, Apple is its own beast when it comes to AI research. It as is Microsoft and Amazon and IBM and every other company that researches stuff for a living. I don't know. I mean, I don't see this being a huge deal, nope. But it is interesting that somebody who was prominent within Google is now going over to Apple.
It's, you know, there are five very qualified people in line to take his place. To me, his reasoning for leaving rings really hollow when he waited for months until Apple showed him a bunch of money. I mean, I get it if you want to stand up for what you believe in. If it'd been me and it was something I believed in, I know Daniel knows this, I'd have quit the next damn day. I told Google to stuff it, and then I wondered how I was going to eat. But, you know, not everybody's like me. I can't read his mind, but that's just kind of how it feels to me. It's a little hollow. Maybe there was money was part of the reason, too.
I mean, I'm sure money was part of the reason, but also it's kind of hard to have faith in your employer after your employer just absolutely botched a situation that left two of your friends and your subordinates out of a job.
See, yeah, like I said, I would have quit instantly, but not everybody's like me. So I'm not going to pretend to be able to read minds.
I'm going to assume that it's like, okay, that just happened. That is my cue to start looking for the door.
Yeah, I mean, this was done under the auspices of the team was being restructured, and that limited this person's ability to do their job. At the same time, we're not really privy to the internal workings of this particular division. This is not something we cover actively. It's we've covered it as it's come up, but this is a pretty opaque part of Google, right? And it's not something that is, until this Timnit Gebru controversy, was really something that we have ever really thought about, aside from when the AI team would turn in some of its work and the product team would then talk about it, right? Usually having to do with cameras, but this was more about AI ethics. This is about what are the implications of huge data sets as they pertain to racial bias, gender bias, and things like that. And I mean, this person who left has been with Google since 2007. So clearly, this has been a long time brewing, and it just is another nail in the coffin of not the team itself, but the reputation. And that just, like, this goes part and parcel with another another division within Google that has had a pretty rough few months, Stadia. So Stadia had another person lead, this time the product lead, John Justice. He's left. And, you know, again, like, we don't know the implications on Stadia as a product, but the fact that it's another big departure, it does not speak well to the future of Google's gaming strategy here.
See, I got to disagree with that, Daniel. I think this is a big deal because outlets like Android Central want to make it a big deal. And we should. That's our beat to cover news. This is news. Again, they've already got somebody to fill that position. If an executive at Kroger Foods International or ConAgra leaves, that doesn't mean your local grocery store is going to go down. It just means that, you know, they have to find somebody else with good ideas. So, you know, when Stadia gets better or gets worse, that's when you can say, oh, well, maybe John Justice leaving did have an effect. But right now, this doesn't mean a lot to me, except, you know, maybe this guy found a better job, or maybe he hated his job and needed to get away. I don't know why he left. If it was performance-based, that would be a whole lot better news, but we don't know that. I don't know. I really hate. I go across the internet and I see the downfall of Stadia. You know, well, Stadia has nothing to fall down from right now. So I don't know. The sensationalism that surrounds these things kind of turns me off. This could just be business.
Okay. On the one hand, you're absolutely right. This is not spelling Stadia's impending doom, but this was not some middle level manager here. This was the head of product. This was the vice president of Stadia as a division. Yep. And yes, we know that Google is restructuring a lot of its teams to be more product manager focused. So it will allow individual product managers to run their own team separately. And it does not, from what we've learned through some of the external reporting, it means that some of these higher level VP roles may not be as necessary. However, the fact that this is not the only major Stadia person to leave over the last couple of months, plus the fact that, you know, it just feels like a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point. I want Stadia to succeed. I really do. I like the service. Genuinely, I really do. I think it's an excellent service. But Stadia has proven that it cannot separate itself from the PlayStation, Xbox, you know,
duopoly.
Duopoly, thank you. And I don't know. I think that, like, in the same article where we talk about this this departure, we also mention that major people from, like, Google have, or Nest and Google have left in recent months. But I don't worry about Nest shutting down when a VP at Nest leaves the company. And I agree with you. I'm not worried that Stadia is going to shut down tomorrow. But it's just one more aspect of Stadia to be less confident about.
I feel you. This John Justice could have had an idea a month from now that made Stadia better. And now he's not there to have that idea. I get that. I mean, but, you know, Stadia is what it is. And I don't expect things to change for better or worse because, you know, their head of product left. That's just how Google has always been. And not just Google, every company. I remember reading about people from IBM leaving and how IBM was going to topple. And, you know, even back then, I'm like, you know, this is a little sensationalizing things a little bit. And that's just, you know, that's just my take. I wish him the best. I know it's not good for morale and it's not good for productivity when somebody in that position leaves. But I don't think this is going to have much effect on the actual product.
I mean, as somebody who's had to watch multiple, like, several years of IBM layoffs through my dad, because he worked for IBM for basically his entire adult life. Yeah, it's one of those things that when a head leaves and then it's like you start to see, okay, things aren't necessarily great. things aren't necessarily great for Stadia between this and shutting down the original games division a couple of months ago. So Stadia is definitely having some shifting. It can still find its proper footing and still keep moving forward and become something better and become something that competes. We just don't see what that path it would be right now between Xbox Game Pass and GeForce Now, or at least I don't see what the path forward is for Stadia.
Just block Game Pass from Android phones.
Look, I agree with you. Like, one thing we didn't say was that apparently John Justice actually, he didn't leave the company in December, but he sort of stepped down from his VP role in December.
I didn't know that.
This is reporting from Game Informer. The other part of it is that he's not the only, as I said, not the only big departures. When Jade Raymond left, which she was the one who headed Google's first-party game studio, a lot of her second in command, or like her soldiers, I guess, followed her to this new venture that she's starting. And as a result, Stadia is losing a lot of the developer support that they had remaining, the ones that they didn't end up firing. And I don't know, it just feels like a cascading effect. We'll leave it there. I really don't know, and I don't want to speculate anymore, because I agree with you, Jerry. It is partly my fault and our fault as an industry that we perpetuate this.
It's not our fault. This is the news we're supposed to report.
I'm not suggesting we don't report it, but putting a very dour tone on it all the time.
Did we do that? Like, I'm sorry if we did. I didn't mean to call us out.
At the same time, Google has a history of this, right? If it was another company, I wouldn't be so worried. But Google does have a history of just pivoting quickly and exiting out of categories. And
the Google graveyard is filled with the corpses of once great services.
Or is it filled with smart decisions to get rid of stuff that doesn't make money?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Google reported record earnings again this quarter last week. So you may be onto something.
It's not good for us, but it might be good for Google.
All right, let's talk quickly. Actually, we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about a couple of these Apple versus Epic tidbits.
Hang on.
And then we will be back. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Indeed. AI can do some incredible things. But for most jobs in your company, you need a good old-fashioned carbon-based life form, preferably a brilliant one, preferably as soon as possible. If you're looking for great minds that can move the world, you can hire them with Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview, all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications, and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resume on Indeed fits your job description immediately, and Indeed skills tests that on average reduce hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So if you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/ACP. That's a $75 credit at Indeed.com/ACP. Indeed.com/ACP, offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, just a couple of things from this. So the Apple versus Epic trial is in it's ending its second week. There's a lot of PlayStation related stuff. A lot of it is just Apple and Epic sort of getting into arguments, but there's a few tidbits that I wanted to mention. One is just this ridiculous thing. So basically, along with Apple, Epic wanted to avoid paying the 30% cut on the Play Store. And they were discussing with NVIDIA last year that one way to do that would actually be to run a version of Fortnite for Android emulated on a Windows PC and then streamed to Android phones through GeForce Now with mapped touch controls. So
we know that works.
Literally, you are reproducing a mobile app through a streaming platform to do the exact same thing, just so that Epic wouldn't have to pay the 30% fee. It is mind-bogglingly brilliant in its it's just like subterfuge here. But I loved that little tidbit because it like made me so happy. Not that I want Epic to weasel its way out of a 30% cut, but just that the there's so much effort being put into trying to subvert the norms that Google and Apple have built over the last decade. It's really incredible.
I also just don't get going to all of these extra hoops on Android when third-party app stores are a thing. Like, after their Project Liberty nonsense, Epic Games made their own little app store and put it on Android, and it wasn't that hard to install, and you had to do, I think you had to click through a permission like 2 or 3 times, and that was it. Like,
yeah, but
why go to all Huawei of that effort?
That. You and
Huawei
I don't
isn't
know
trying
how
to recreate all
through.
Of Google. Well, Huawei needs to recreate all of Google without GMS. Fortnite just needs to serve up its own games. Like, I feel like this isn't that hard.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the fact that they have data to show that third-party app stores don't have the same, nearly the same engagement. Google makes it. They put a bunch of security messages on phones that people do actually listen to. And a lot of those security messages say, you don't know if what you're installing is safe. And that includes the Epic Game Store. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. On Samsung, it's easier because the Samsung Galaxy Store has the has Fortnite still, and it does not serve up all of these warnings. But if you're not on a Samsung phone, or if you're on a Samsung phone and you don't know that the Galaxy Store exists, then you're SOL.
You will this morning because you're forced to accept new terms or stop using your phone. Screw you, Samsung.
Is that what happened to you? I didn't
get that. You'll get a pop-up on your Galaxy phone talking about the new terms of service and privacy policy. It's just, I don't know. That has nothing to do with Epic and Apple, so I'll complain to myself.
I mean, that is like we'll talk about privacy policy with WhatsApp in a minute. But you know, there's just a few more things here, right? Like Sony wanted to force Epic to pay for crossplay with Fortnite on PlayStation, which is a thing.
No, they do have to pay. Like they do the have Epic to CEO pay. Stated in court, they have to pay in order to get crossplay on PlayStation.
PlayStation, Sony did not want crossplay on its service. So Epic had to shell money out to actually get it done. That kind of makes sense, right? Sony wants exclusives, and if they're going to be forced through demand to include crossplay, then sure, charge developers for it.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe that shoots, you know, that's Sony shooting itself in the foot a little bit when it comes to a game like Fortnite, but I get their policy.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many little other little things, like when Lori Wright from Microsoft was on the stand, she talked about how Apple forced Microsoft to really, like, so basically Apple lets Netflix and other subscription media services offer up, you know, all of the movies and TV shows they want in a mm-hmm. single app, but they won't do the same thing for games. And Microsoft was like, there's no functional difference. Apple wants us to have a separate listing in the App Store for every game they want to put inside the Game Pass experience. And they were forced to abandon that plan and use Safari to stream Xbox Game Pass, which they're doing now. But a Google engineer this week wrote a really good detailed blog post about all of the ways that is inferior to a native game experience.
That was a good read.
And we'll put it on the show notes if you are interested. But I mean, it comes down to the fact that developers, if you're streaming through WebKit, you don't have access to the same APIs. Latency's higher. The games can't be as big, so they have to stream more. You can't cache as nearly as much data locally on your phone.
Well, you don't have that entry. You don't have that metal access, which and is you don't really have metal. Important. Yeah,
sure. I mean, games. Well, if you're streaming a game, you don't really need access to local.
Yeah, that's what I'm. You know, it's you don't have. It's not like you're building a game that is an app.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like we're talking about the difference between games streamed to you and PWAs, which are like locally stored apps that function through a browser. But Microsoft would have liked to at least have the option of caching some of these game files locally beyond 50 megabytes, but Apple does not allow that. Plus the fact that they can't control network conditions as well because the network APIs are not available through the browser. So there's just a whole bunch of stuff that Microsoft can't control. Same with Stadia, which is now available as well through the browser on iOS. Same with NVIDIA and GeForce Now. All three of those services cannot go through the App Store. And Epic tried to use Microsoft as an example of why Apple is being anti-competitive.
My biggest takeaway from this is that the 30% App Store cut is more important to Apple than selling more iPhones. If Apple could have countered Epic, give us a 90-day exclusivity for Fortnite and we'll accommodate all your needs. And, you know, that would have been one hell of a marketing tool and it would have sold more iPhones. But Apple is mostly concerned about their 30% cut. That, you know, they must make more money that way through the Play Store than they do selling phones.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just wild. Like,
and I just want Gregory Peck to come out and start talking about busting up a Shivero or something. It's just, this would make a hell of a movie.
Oh, it's going to be a movie someday.
With Ashton Kutcher.
God help us. All right. There's so much reporting on this on iMore. Please go read it. It's really interesting stuff. The Epic versus Apple trial will be at least another 2 weeks. So we'll probably talk about this again next week. Let's dig into some of this WhatsApp stuff. So we're recording this on Friday. We are doing that because we had a really busy week, but that's besides the point. What it allowed us to do is actually talk about this. WhatsApp came out today saying that it will not cut off your access to the service beyond May 15th if you don't agree to its new Facebook-related privacy policy. But that's not the entire truth, because after a few weeks of not agreeing to it, you will no longer get notifications. You will no longer be able to accept incoming chats or phone calls, and you will not even see your ongoing chat list in the app. So the app will work, but you won't be able to do anything in the app. So yeah. WhatsApp is essentially doing is just disconnecting you from the service.
Everybody listening, and I know WhatsApp is, you know, by far the most popular messaging platform out there. Do yourself a favor and try Telegram. Have your friends try Telegram. And then you can just tell Facebook to suck it. That's what they need. They need a mass migration of people just telling them to suck it. And then they'll start thinking about maybe what's best for to keep all the users they have. Because their solution here is just garbage. Yes, you can still use the app, but it just doesn't work. That's crap.
Yeah, it's BS. But it's also, this is like the most Facebook way of getting everybody to conform to their policy, right? We're not going to shut you down, but we're not going to, the app is not going to stop working. But you won't be able to do anything inside of the app. So essentially, that's exactly what's happening here. You know, this is also the week that Facebook's oversight committee issued a pretty strong renunciation of Facebook's policy of suspending Donald Trump without permanently banning him. They gave the company 6 months to make a decision one way or the other. However, there is no reason stated in the policy, in the agreement between Facebook and its independent oversight committee, that Facebook can't just once again kick
ignore
this
it and do back whatever the hell they want, because that's what they've always done
for another 6 months. So this could just be a soccer match for the rest of our lives. Donald Trump will not come back to the service, but won't be, quote, banned until he dies or something.
And you know, I'm going to have to agree with the oversight board here and take the unpopular opinion. Either ban him or don't ban him. Don't play. You think about if this had been was happening to you, wouldn't you rather just have it over with? And okay, well, I can't use Facebook ever again. Instead of sitting there, I wonder if I can use Facebook next month.
I mean, let's also be perfectly blatantly clear. If he gets his account back, he's going to go right back to blatantly violating Facebook's terms of service. Maybe. The same way he did in January. No, because they've tightened up their rules on misinformation since then.
All right, but
he would not be able to get around those.
Take the individual out of the picture. The policy of just suspending someone indefinitely is not cool. Ban them or don't ban them.
Well, their policy isn't to indefinitely suspend people. It's you break these rules X number of times, ban hammer, you're gone. And they didn't give him the ban hammer the way that they were supposed to, which is why they're saying, okay, either implement the policy as you have written it or change the policy.
Right. Yeah, this doesn't have it. I mean, ultimately, it's not about Trump. It's about Facebook not enforcing its own policy.
Right.
And carving out a special dispensation for a very, very controversial public figure that they would rather keep their good side for all intents and purposes because he's going to run again in 2024. And that's, you know, that is just Facebook protecting its own interest. So regardless if this was a Republican or a Democrat, somebody who's unknown or very well known, they are not enforcing their policy as written. And that is, I think that's the issue here.
Right. What's that smart thing I said before the show that I said, make sure I say this during the podcast about uniformity or something? Whatever. Pretend I said a really smart thing here about making the rules apply to everybody the same.
Deal. We'll pretend that you said something smart. All right. Let's talk about Twitter. So Twitter is rolling out its Clubhouse competitor Spaces to everybody who has more than 600 followers. This is a thing I now see in the evenings, 5 or 6 Spaces in my Fleets bar, which is quickly just becoming a Spaces bar because nobody actually uses Fleets. They are also rolling out a tip jar. It's a commission-free way of tipping your favorite tweeter or creator, which is nice, except for the fact that PayPal seems to be taking a cut, but that's not a Twitter thing. It's a PayPal thing. Twitter also bought Scroll, which is this really interesting little company that uses cookies to hide ads on select websites. So if our friends at Android Police, for instance, they have a Scroll subscription. So if you subscribe to Scroll, you don't get ads on Android Police because Android Police has a little bit of code in their HTML that says, okay, if you detect somebody who has this Scroll cookie, don't show them ads. Twitter hopes to bundle this into a subscription service. We're not really sure what that's going to look like yet. But one of the implications of buying Scroll was that one of my favorite services, Nuzzle, which Scroll owned, has been shut down. Nuzzle was a really cool service. It was started by Jonathan Abrams 10 years ago or so. He was the guy who started, launched Friendster all the way back in like 2005. He's a really smart entrepreneur. And now I think he's a venture capitalist. Anyway, Nuzzle consolidated stories shared by your Twitter followers. So if there was a really big viral post going live and all of your Twitter followers were sharing it independently, it would basically like consolidate, annotate them all into one place. So it would say, this New York Times article was shared by 46 of your followers. And you would be able to quickly see the article, but also see what those individual Twitter followers said about the article, which was great. It was just a really convenient service. That is no longer, as of today, working. So that's really crappy. And yeah, that's it. We're not gonna talk about any of the other social media stuff.
Okay.
All right. That's it. We're gonna We're going to go right into our favorite part of the show. What's making us happy this week? Jerry, what's making you happy?
Yes, this is weird, but it's really cool. And I know that it's going to ring good with at least a few people. I have a green thumb, and no, Daniel, don't go there. I love to grow house plants. I have a plant called a Nepenthes. It's a tropical pitcher plant. And they're not difficult to grow. They're just difficult to grow well. And it's been 7 years. It's starting to actually grow its pitchers, which means that I have taken good care of it for 7 years. And if you're a fan of this kind of plant, you understand just how cool that is. If you're not, I'm going to tell you that 99% of the people that get one don't get this far unless they've bought one with pitchers already on it. So I am just really happy about it. I know it's a really oddball thing, but man, every night I look, I have a greenhouse in my bedroom, actually a big grow tent with it in there. Every night I look at it before I go to sleep and they're getting bigger and bigger and I get happier and happier.
That's really
good. Laugh at
your
me.
Proficiency level and your plant has evolved.
Yes.
Congratulations.
If I was playing Stardew Valley, my onion is gold.
No, I'm actually jealous because I have the opposite of a green thumb. I can't even keep flowers alive for more than a few days. So, I know that's dumb because flowers die, but I mean, I have trouble keeping anything in my house alive. My goal this year is to actually learn how to transplant a houseplant from one pot to a bigger pot. Cause every time I've done that in the past, it has not worked. So I need to actually learn how to do
that. Probably overthinking it.
I might be, but they've never survived the move. So
and that I think that's just a thing. Some people are good at it and some people aren't. It's like any other thing.
Yeah, I just gotta learn. I just gotta take the time to learn how to do it. Cool. Thanks, Jerry. Ara, what's making you happy this week?
This week was May the 4th, so we got tons of Star Wars funness this week. Especially the new series, The Bad Batch. Like when Clone Wars was out, I wasn't a totally huge fan. Once Disney Plus launched and I watched most of the series, I became a bigger fan of it. The Bad Batch has been, I think it's been had a good start. It was a little bit rushed in the first episode, but second episode came out today. Second episode was nice, tight, contained, reintroduced us to some characters that we only saw like once, like 10 years ago. So it was a good episode. I'm really hoping that this series does well. I'm also very, very happy because this is basically the only Disney Plus original that I will be watching between now and Loki. Except for Luca. Luca comes out in June.
I was actually hoping you would talk about The Bad Batch because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm glad to hear it's... I've heard that it's like an okay show right now, but it has a lot of potential.
It has a lot of potential. Like a lot of people were like, okay, the Clone Wars are over. Why are we following these guys around? And I'm like, these are characters that we have no clue where they're going to end up in 20 years. Like most of the characters in most of the major figures in Clone Wars are either dead or we know what happens to them over the next 20 or 30 years. Bad Batch is a bunch of characters that they were just introduced in the last episode of last season of Clone Wars. And they have not been mentioned in any like they haven't been mentioned in the sequel era at all. So this is a blank slate. It's like, oh, cool. We can use these guys and actually explore what's going to happen over the next 20 years. So there's promise. They just got to get into a good rhythm. We need more character development because these are characters that we haven't seen a whole lot of yet. So it's like, okay, all of these feel a little bit too much like caricatures of different kinds of military cliches. So I'm hoping to see more character development and I'm hoping that we can actually start exploring the universe more because Star Wars just has the tendency to be like, okay, we're going to go to these six planets the same way we do in every generation.
So breaking news here, we didn't talk about this in the show, but you know how last week we talked about how Roku pulled the YouTube TV app over the, you know, they couldn't agree to terms and Google wanted Roku to use the AV1 codec and all that stuff. Google apparently now added a shortcut to YouTube TV within the YouTube app so that you can watch YouTube TV through the browser on Roku, which
That's
is
smart.
Just remarkable. We were talking about PWAs earlier. This is a perfect example of a PWA.
That was like
solving its own problem.
That's how Microsoft fixed things. Good job, Google.
All right. What's making me happy this week? I have a unopened Oculus Quest 2 sitting to my right. I got one at the imploration of many of our colleagues in the game on the gaming team. Nick Sutrick in particular, who's been on the show a couple of times, he just talks about how amazing Oculus is. I'm so excited to try it. In particular, I want to try Supernatural and its workouts, and I want to see what it's all like, what's all about. So I will report back next week with my first impressions on the Oculus Quest.
Get it out of the box. Zuckerberg's getting claustrophobic in there.
Yeah, I know. I'll give him a little kiss on the head before I dive in. But that is me. I don't know if it'll make me happy, but I suspect it will.
Is this your first dive into VR?
I mean, I have a daydream somewhere.
Well, so could be your first dive into VR.
I have a cardboard. Yeah. My daughter uses the cardboard as a camera. She thinks the button on the top is like a little shutter button. And it's super cute. But
are you going to let your daughter use the Oculus Quest at any point in the near future?
No, I don't think she's ready for that.
No, she's not. And this is what I was leading to. Do me a favor, and a lot of people, because more data points are better, dig into some of those YouTube 360 VR videos and see if you can't make yourself nauseous. I know that's a horrible thing to ask you to do.
I was about to say, I already have enough issues with nausea.
But that's VR gets a lot of people out of whack, and other people aren't affected by it. And as somebody who is super affected by it, I couldn't find any VR that I could stand except for, you know, the big expensive Vive. And, you know, that's just hard to justify because everything else made me nauseous. And I'm just, you know, curious, the more people I can talk to that are or aren't affected, the better. So give that a try for me.
I just want a VR thing that'll just let me like stand in front of Disney Castle when I'm at home or walk through.
Cardboard does that.
Yeah, but the Tales from Galaxy's Edge, I'm just looking at that and going, God, this is going to be great for anybody who doesn't live here like I do. I just want everything.
All right, that's it for this week. You can find Ara at Ara Wagco. You can find Jerry at GB Hill. You can find me at Android Central, or me at Journey Dan. You can find all of us at Android Central. I got that one wrong today, damn it. Let us know what you think of the show. If you have any ideas on upcoming guests, anybody you want to see on here, let us know. Podcast at Android Central. We love getting your feedback. Share this show with a friend. We are really trying to expand our horizons. We are one of, I think, two Android-focused podcasts. The other one is our colleagues. We love all about Android over at Twit. But we don't know of a lot of other good, solid Android podcasts. If you think any of your friends or family would be interested in hearing it, please send this to them. We'd really appreciate it. That is it. We'll be back next week. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Get your taxes done.
Tip me on Twitter.